Welcome to The Double Up. I'm Shannon Hughes.
And I'm your guest host this week, Jess Grimwood, and we're here to serve as the voice of women surfing.
This week, we head to the Ivory Coast with Leanne Curran, talk the great New South Wales roadie, and the new tour vlog from Laura Iniver. Check in on a post-heat with Freya Prum, and dig into a wrap-up of Sunset. Hello, Jess Grimwood.
Hey, Shannon. Thank you for having me as your guest host this week.
Thanks so much for joining. A quick note to our listeners and our audience. Rachel was unable to record with me this week, and so we thought, what better way to just continue the news of women surfing getting out to the world than to bring in Jess to join me for the conversation. So I'm stoked that you were available.
Thank you very much, Shannon. I always love talking about women surfing with you, and I feel very honored and privileged to be stepping into the Tillyisms and the Rachelisms, what yes. do you call them? What she speaks, yeah. I feel like there's some big shoes to fill, but
huge,
you know how
huge.
Much I love surfing, yeah.
Oh, that's so good. Hey, how has your week been going?
It's been good. I've been soaking up. There's been so much surf content lately, and as you can hear behind me, I've just gotten home from work and I've got some dogs out the back, so I'll give that little disclaimer straight up off the bat. But yeah, just soaking up plenty of surfing content. We had so much of the CT and of the QSs to soak up in between work this week. So it's been a full week of surfing after work.
Yeah, it's been so good to just see everything rolling again between Sunset finishing up in some pretty good conditions and then also having the QS just kicking off like all across the world is really fun to see. There was one other thing that the news just broke today, and I thought it was definitely worthy before we get into our full surf conversation, Jess, because you'd be just as stoked on this as I think a lot of our audience would be. But did you see the news that the U.S. women's soccer team has won the lawsuit?
Yeah, I did. And I actually saw that via the Double Up post, I believe. And I just thought, that is just such a precedence to set for women's sport. And it just made me grin. Like, I'm not even like crying with over emotion. I'm just like, yes.
It's just so incredible that it's actually come to a close. So it's been 6 years. For those of you who aren't aware what's been happening, the USA women's soccer team has had a lawsuit out against USA soccer over like a massive pay disparity between the men's and the women's team, where the women's team has been like phenomenally more successful than the men's team could ever hope to be. The women's team has won like so many gold medals at the Olympics. They've won so many World Cups, all these different things that the men have like not even scratched the surface of like qualifying into, basically. And the women have been paid like a fraction of that. And so to see that they have just held their ground and fought for this equal pay, they're getting a payout of like $24 million to backdate what they weren't paid over the last few years. It's incredible.
So does that go to like, say if you were competing in the team in the past and within that time bracket, do you get the payback? Like, does some of the money feed back into the old team, or does it all just go forwards for the current squad?
I don't know. I guess that's something that we'll have to see as it like the story continues to unfold, because it's just been out for probably like maybe 10 hours or something. But I think the idea is that they are back paying lost income to those women, which is incredible. And then it obviously sets the precedent now that women, like young girls growing up in the United States playing soccer, can actually have full-on careers when they make the USA women's soccer team. Because up until now, like there were some women who were having to work side jobs to also compete for their Olympic team, which is completely insane. So it's definitely just changed it all.
It's like such a great step forward. I feel like it's just like that's happened in surfing too. I mean, over here we had that. We had Pauline Mensah, who got back paid the men's amount of the prize money back in the 80s or the 90s whenever she won her world title, and she only just got back paid it now. She's a bus driver, and it just like, yeah, it just inspires. I love that the American team are leading the way and taking on their own industry and their own league to keep them accountable, even for the stuff that's, you know, 10 years past or whatever it is. So hats off. I think they've set a very, very good tone for the future of women's sport.
Yeah, it's so good. And it's incredible to think that like our sport of surfing has already equaled out pay like at the highest level. And that's trickled down to like all sorts of different types of surfing. events, which is like pretty wild to think that surfing is a sport that is not nearly as big as the sport of soccer or football across the world, that they've like our sport has actually kind of set the precedent for that. And now to start seeing the changes happen in soccer, it would be amazing to see what other change starts to happen. And I guess just even to think of like the different teams of women in different sports and different individual sports as well, that will start to speak up for their right to equal pay as well.
Yeah, it's like you said, just sets such a good bar for all the other sports as well. And I'm proud to be a part of surfing that people or other sports look to us to have set that kind of example already. But yeah, there's a long way to go for every sport around the world. But yeah, hats off American team for leading the way with that and winning too. You know, I love that about Americans. You guys are so good with all that stuff. There's always some, you know, group of people championing like for their rights, or it's just like literally what do you call it? America is land of the great land of the free or something like that.
Yeah, I guess you could say land of the free. That's what they like to believe about themselves, ourselves. I am very American. I own that. Whether or not it's true is another thing. But no, it is a pretty incredible space to be able to fight for freedom for sure.
Very cool.
Well, shall we get into things and hear your Aussie take on what's been happening in the surfing world this week?
Yeah, why not? I'm already like sweating a little bit thinking about how I'm going to bring my Rachelism into this conversation, but we'll see how we go. We'll kick it off with some surfing.
You're going to do great. And now into the top news stories from this week in women's surf. Well, Jess, for our first news story of the week, we wanted to highlight Sonic Souvenirs version 2, which is a great surf edit that features Leanne Curran alongside of Mikey February and Alex Nost on the Ivory Coast of Africa.
Yeah, that's just a really, really great clip. I don't know if you had a chance to watch much of Leanne surfing, but obviously she's a daughter of the famous Tom Curran. He's kind of like the style master or guru, and Leanne's just not far behind. She's so incredibly stylish, and that little clip of her, I feel like, really kind of embodies what she's about. She really, you know, walks to the beat of a different drum. She always kind of has, and she's incredibly musically talented. So I felt like that was a really nice, beautiful, creative representation of Leanne and her surfing and her music.
Yeah, and a really beautiful clip overall of just celebrating like music and surfing coming together, and the, you know, the similarities that the two have so much in common, and for the three of those surfers to be kind of exploring that within African culture as well, especially that clip in that moment with Leanne of her being able to teach those women to surf, and that it was kind of the common belief for where they're coming from on the Ivory Coast that women don't surf at all. And it's not a place that they could have ever envisioned themselves to be, whether or not, you know, they're seeing men surf often. What a beautiful thing to be able to witness someone like Leanne being able to bring that realization to them that they could envision themselves in the water as well.
Yeah, so perfectly put with those women. I mean, Leanne, I'm sure you've probably met her a few times, but she's a very quiet person, and she's literally like one of those people that she wouldn't be rocking up in the town and tooting her own horn. She would have just like quietly kind of slid into that town on their surf trip when they were filming. And then she's just like one of those really down to earth, grounded people. So to have her as the representative for like women surfing, that's bringing this to this town for the first time for these ladies, I thought that was a pretty special moment. That was kind of like the climax for me in that episode, really. Maybe because I have that biased women surfing lens across my glasses, but I thought that was a really beautiful part of breaking down the barrier. And I enjoyed watching her just kind of soak up that experience. But she's just such a creative, incredible human. I can't say that enough. I was telling you before, I actually did a lot of traveling with Leanne back on the QS days. And we used to stay at her mum's house in France, in Biarritz. And her stepfather actually, before we knew her, we slept on the beach in France every year going to that event. And he actually picked us up one day because
So funny, like in your board bags down on the beach, and then like you get rescued by Leanne's family.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, she's so surf. Like she's a surfer through and through. She's such a crispy grommet all the time. She's just surfing and playing music. That's what she lives for. my best mate Charlotte and I would go to the QS events in Europe and in France. It was always so expensive in that part. So we would just sleep in our board bags and tie our surfboard leg ropes to our wrists and put them outside the board bag so we had space. It was always raining that time of year for that event. And yeah, Leanne
pretty much. Sounds so uncomfortable.
Yeah, it was not very comfortable, but we were living the grind, you know, literally. And Leanne, we were surfing against her. We were all, you know, 18 or whatever. And she just said, hey, why don't you just come and stay at my family's house? And that was it. We stayed there every year from then on. And then she'd come and stay at our house in Australia. And it was always like surfing the comps for her, I feel like, was kind of a chore. And the real kind of enjoyment that I saw her at that time get was in between the events or in between the heats when we'd play music. Like, she was fully just into it, so creative, so musically talented. And she just lined up. She put me on some type of percussion, and the same with Charlotte. And we would just like record these funny little demo things in half English, half French, and just be weirdos pretending we're doing album shoots and doing stuff like that in between the events.
That's so good. I'm just wondering if we need to consider changing our double up theme song to one from your band with Leanne Curran back in the day.
Do you know what? Well, she would still have those recordings because I feel like she's the type of person that holds on to music and stuff like that. And she would have it. We were called La Charica. So it was like Leanne, Charlotte and Jessica.
That's so good.
And yeah, we thought we were just so cool. We were so broke. We were only eating like, you know, on the QS, like we just eat rice and carrot and tuna pretty much. And we would just surf our heats and come back, eat that, and then just stay up for hours recording all the weirdest songs. And Leanne would just be that's the puppy barking out back.
He likes the music conversation.
Yeah, just wants to be in on the podcast, actually. Basically, yeah, we would just record and Leanne would be masterminding. She'd be instructing us and telling us, come on, you know, just feel it. Oh, that sounds good. Let's do it. And we literally just went into this funny little side world of music and competing. And she, I think that maybe the competition maybe like stifled her creativity a bit. And you could tell she was doing so well and she would just be so incredible in a heat, but she just kind of yearned to be more creative and less constricted within the realm of competition. So she kind of like fell away from comps, I think, and got into that free surfing and went towards working with brand like Vans that she's done this episode with, and she plays in a band. I think she's called Betty the Shark or something now, and yeah, she's a pretty incredible human.
Yeah, she's done a lot of incredible stuff. I think that really makes a lot of sense with you like describing how she actually was as a competitor, like from you seeing her at events, and that it wasn't something that really like struck the right chord with her necessarily. And so to see the fruit of what's come out of her post her competitive career is such, it's been such beautiful music and such incredible like surf filming and everything that's kind of come out of that, like some really incredible little edits that have been dropping, especially over the last year. And so it's really cool to see that she's like found her niche and that it meant leaving that competitive side and just embracing a different side of what even her dad and her parents were passing down from her. down to her from that music side and bringing surfing and music to life. And like now we're getting to see that in this great edit, Sonic Souvenirs.
Yeah, she's like you said, her parents are incredibly talented and creative. And, you know, competition has so much for the girls. It's so beneficial to build people's competition surfing and their careers, but it is very constrictive, I guess. It's like, it's very within the lines of competing all the time. You train a certain way, you surf a certain way, you surf a certain board, and you surf when they tell you that your heat's on. So I think that that lifestyle for Leanne being as creative and as musical and I guess like in step with her own rhythm and with the rhythm of like nature around her, it just really didn't go. And similar to what happened with Mikey February, who's in that clip too. I mean, he used to be around on the competition scene all the time. He competed at ISAs. You would have watched him a million times, Shannon. And he was just that same thing, that incredibly creative style and beautiful surfing. And it kind of was like maybe a little bit squashed in the competition realm. It didn't really match with his true, I guess, passion for the ocean and surfing and creating in it.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. Like we saw Mikey actually make it onto the championship tour, which was really exciting. But then there was kind of this confusing year of seeing him in that, the only year that he had there, of him really wanting to surf the way that he surfs in that really expressive, stylish way, and just to surf whatever the wave was offering him, but being forced to have to surf it competitively. And that just didn't really link up for him. So there was these like glimmers and moments in that time when he was on tour that were like really incredible, but a lot of it that just, it just didn't suit who he was, I think, as a person. And it's so interesting now to see that him and Leanne are taking a different journey and working together on something when they clearly have had such similar paths like that.
Yeah. And do you know what's interesting? I find it funny because I've heard some similar comments about both of them. So, and you can hear as well, it's absolutely pouring down here at the moment.
Is that what that is? I was wondering.
It is pouring. It has been like torrential weather for the last week. And the best thing about that is no one's been onto the late afternoon glass off. So I call it the Largos, but it's been like secret little after rain Largos. So yes, apologies again. It's all happening here audio wise at Baddow Bay. Dogs barking, torrential rain. There's probably going to be a hurricane soon. I'm not sure.
It's all coming down. No, it's been crazy rain here too, like especially over the last 48 hours, just unbelievably heavy. And if it starts up, you'll be hearing it on our side for sure.
Oh, perfect. But yeah, with Mikey and Leanne, I heard somebody say, or I read something that somebody said that Mikey's style is fabricated. And I've also read in the past that Leanne's style is like she's just copying her dad. But excuse me, if you've ever surfed in your life and you try to fabricate a style like those two, either of them, you will not look like that. You cannot fabricate that type of skill and style. That's like intuition and that's like rhythm with the ocean. That is not a made up thing that they're just putting on for a marketing effect. So those things that I've read, I strongly disagree with those comments, and I'm putting it all down to like the intuitive flow of those two surfers. I think, like we said, well paired in Sonic Souvenirs, but incredible ocean people.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. Actually, I saw that headline recently. Maybe it was Stab or somewhere on, it's probably Beach Grip. Who knows where it was, but that line about Mikey's style like being fabricated, and it's just so ridiculous. Like, and even to think of that in the context of music, like the greatest musicians just play music because that's what they know and that's who they are. And it just like is so naturally what they're able to create. And I feel like the sort of style that we see from Leanne surfing or from Mikey surfing is that same thing. And like Mick Fanning's never going to surf the way that Mikey surfs. Like his mix in one of the most incredible surfers of all time, but compare him to the style of Mikey February. And it's just like, it's just a completely different thing.
Yeah. I mean, I enjoy reading those articles from Beach Grit and Stab. I think they're pretty funny most of the time. And I really enjoy his kind of angle and attitude to a lot of the things. And he says the opposite thing and he says things to get people riled up. But he's definitely got me riled up on that one.
It worked.
Yeah, it worked, that one. So
he got us
off.
Talking about it.
Yeah, good clickbait journalism there, because I was like, Mikey February as if. But like I have read that about Leanne before too. People were saying about her style that she's just trying to copy her dad. But I mean, there are some similarities, but that's like with every single father-daughter or father-son. I feel like that's even at your local beach. You see the young girls and guys growing up and they surf like their parents, if their parents can surf. Like it's just like you watch the person surf the most, like for the guys around here or the girls, it's their mums and dads. And then you just emulate that. That's how you learn. And then you just put your own taste on it. But I challenge anybody to go out and do some of those turns that Mikey's done and fabricate putting your hands in that spot. And I'll guarantee you, you're going to eat absolute rock lobsters.
Rock lobsters for lunch for sure. Well, if you would like to debate this or just see some really good surfing and hear some really good music and a little taste of African culture, which I just have such a special place in my heart for from living in South Africa for so many years, check out Sonic Souvenirs V2. It is all over the internet, so you will have no problem finding it.
Okay, now our second topic for the week, Shannon, is the Great New South Wales Roadie. It's kicking off actually right now in Boomerang, and it's that series of New South Wales Pro Surf Series that kicks off the start of the qualifying events for this season. I know you've been around a lot of the events for the last few years, Shannon. It's a big part of qualifying for all this region over here.
Yeah, it is huge for the Aussie crew. And it's so cool that Surfing New South Wales just gets behind it and puts this full string of events together. I think there's usually like four events tacked together between Boomerang, Port Stephens, Maroubra, and then Avoca. And it is just such a good run to get everyone traveling back together. A lot of the same work crew, Jess, that you and I, that's actually how we met, I think, was probably working in this series that we're talking about right now, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. Do you remember me fangirling over you at the front of the broadcasting truck?
And I fully remember it.
I didn't realize you were working the event because the late and great 1212 Schmoo didn't tell me that you were on the event.
Surprise, surprise.
And so I rocked up and you were out the front with Aaron of the broadcast truck. And I remember looking at my partner Elle and going, oh my goodness, that's Shannon Hughes. And she was like, is it? I was like, oh my God, it's Shannon. And then I came up and I was like, oh my God, I'm your biggest fan.
You were so nice. It was so fun. I was so excited to know there was another girl on the team. And then literally after the day one of commentating, I remember writing to Schmoo, who was, you know, our great mentor for a long time, and just giving this full pitch about, I really just see, and I truly believe this, but I was also like, just wanted to be able to talk to a girl all week in the booth because it's so much fun to like fangirl over women surfing with another girl that also gets it. So I wrote this whole thing to him about like, hey, I really think that Jess has all this potential, which you obviously do. And so we should really focus on training her up this week. And I was like, I'd really appreciate it if you would give me this chance to like mentor her like woman to woman for commentating, like to give her this, you know, to kind of be able to work together. And because I knew if I was just like, hey, can you just put the girls together in the booth? We'd have more fun. There's no chance he'd say yes to that. He'd be like, no, we need to like keep everything shifting around.
Keep in mind, he's listening to this, so don't spill all your secrets.
For sure. Yeah. Anyways, he got back to me and he's like, Shan, that's such a great idea. No, I totally get that. I also agree. It'd be really good for Jess to like learn from you. And so let's do it. And then you and I got to just pair up for the rest of that week. It was so fun.
Oh, that was hands down like the most fun I've had in the booth. And because like some of my best mates, like Sarah Baum and Freya Prum and the girls that surf on the qualifying series here in Australia, made it through to such a late round. And remember, you were just holding it down and keeping it calm and professional. And I was standing on the couch, like applauding and yelling. I was freaking. And you just like anchored the whole thing and just brought your uber professionalism into it. And I remember like going home every night and just going, wow, that's okay. That's how you do it. Cool. Cause I hadn't really, you know, taken lead from anyone before or no one. And everyone just kind of get thrown in there with headphones on and you just go, okay, cool. Now what?
Yeah. It's like, oh, you can surf here. Go talk about it. And that's like the expectation and the training related to it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's like the beauty of it because it comes through very authentic and raw surfing into the booth. But there is always room for professionalism and for actual skills and talent to lead the way. And that's a big highlight for me. That was a career highlight for me, for sure.
Well, career highlight for me too, getting to know you and also just being able to like sit next to someone because you know surfing so well and you competed on the QS for so many years and you've represented Australia for ISAs. Like you've got so much credibility behind you as a surfer. And then also to know that you're like that engaged with what you were watching is just a really fun thing as a commentator to be able to sit next to somebody that like gets the same excitement, but also has so much more insight than what I could provide to something.
I challenge somebody to know more about QS 1000 events than I do. I think the only person that would challenge me on that is Aaron, the producer of the Double Up. I feel like he's the only guy that I would be like out-factored by and out-researched by.
No, you are the one for sure, which is why we like threw you the grind last year. We're like, Jess is going to be the one that watches every single event, pulls apart every heat, gets in there, talks to the girls about things. Like you're just so on top of it. Which is kind of actually strange now thinking about what's happening over these next few weeks with the great New South Wales roadie kicking off. You and I won't be a heavily vested part of the team as we normally have been over the years. How does it feel for you kind of taking a step back from that?
It doesn't really feel that different, to be honest, because I'll still watch every single heat. I have like two devices. If I have to work, you know, like we have to work normal jobs here. I'm plumbing and, you know, you work a normal job sometimes in between, or you did until you were doing your full-time gig. So it still feels the same for me. I've got the comps going on full-time, like on my second device, watching them all the time, updates from the girls, messaging everyone, weighing in my opinion. I come home, I talk to my partner about, you know, her opinion on it. What do you think about this? Freya did this turn. Sarah Baum did this turn. This is the score they got. So it's probably literally exactly the same, except no one's listening to me.
It's so good. Okay, so what are your thoughts? Like having a look at, you know, Boomerang has already kicked off. That's running this week. And then Port Stephens is next weekend.
Yeah, I think Boomerang's sick. It's literally like the best spot for the New South Wales trips. The surf's always good. There's heaps of good back beaches. I think the usual suspects will do really well. Like I said, like, and not just because I'm mates with them, but I just think they surf that wave really well, like Bormi and Freya. And there's a couple of younger girls that live up around that area, Carly Shanahan and some girls that have had some good results already that are a bit younger. So I think they'll do really well because they'll have settled into that spot and traveling to that area and knowing the wave. I think the really young girls will get a chance to have a go at those New South Wales events, like the 14, 15, 16-year-olds, but I just don't think they have that experience and the full, they can't back it up heat after heat after heat against girls like, you know, Juniper Harper and Rosie Smart and all those young Australian regional girls that'll be competing up there. So I think it might be a bit of the usual suspect story for the New South Wales surf series. I don't think it's going to be boring. I think it'll be really good surfing. I think they're going to cop heaps of weather.
Oh, heavy weather.
Oh, they're going to cop it. And they're going to cop surf from, you know, half a foot to probably 6 to 8 foot, which is normal for that part of the road trip. So it'll really bring out who's got their QS grind game on. And looking at the QSs over in your region in North America, like, oh, here's the call out. North America QS, bring us over. We'll come over. We'll do a QS. We'll fit it into Shannon's schedule somehow. But I'd love to see those young 13, 14, 15-year-old girls in your region trying to measure up to some of your ladies like Caitlin Simmons and that.
Yeah, pretty incredible. You know, talking about that with California, the Slow Cal Open at Morro Bay is this week. So they also just recently, a couple weeks ago, ran the Pismo event, which we've already spoken about here on the Double Up. And it is going to be interesting to see like what happens with that young contingency coming out of California, because there's a few of those names like Akira Pinkerton and Alyssa Spencer who have been around slightly longer. But then you've got those really young ones now, like a Bella Kenworthy that's starting to come up out of California, you know, matching a little bit younger than what Katie Simmers is. It's going to be really interesting to see who ends up out on top out of the North America region as things are kicking off and who actually makes it into the Challenger Series when it kicks off here in Australia in May.
Yeah. Do you know, I just thought just straight off the bat of you saying that, it's such an interesting point for the whole format change with the QS regionals being the qualifiers for Challenger Series, because back in, like we were speaking about earlier, those days of traveling on the QS around the world,
sleeping in your board everybody. Bag in the sand in the rain.
Yeah, sleeping on the beaches around the world. And everybody who has been a part of surfing will have this experience. As people like, you know, Rebecca Woods and Jessie Miley and Amy Donahue and all those ladies that grew up in that era did the same thing at some point. But the girls that are coming up now, first of all, won't have those experiences because it's a whole new world with professional surfing and there's a lot more professionalism and money in it. But also, they won't know each other necessarily because they're not allowed to compete cross-regionally. So there's no point and there's no incentive for them to travel to qualify for the Challenger Series.
That
because
is a
they can
really interesting point.
Yeah, I literally just thought of that then and I thought, geez, because we knew, I remember, and I know most of the girls, you know who the heavy hitters are from the other regions because you've surfed in all the 1,000s around the world trying to collect your points to get to the 3,000s and the 5,000s for the next part of the season. So let's just say this is, we'll just keep it for fun's sake, Oz versus America. Our young girls like Rosie Smart and Juniper Harper and the leading, the next charge, the next generation, they won't necessarily know who you the names that you've just thrown up from your super grums from North America, but they're going to meet head to head, you know, in the next season or two or three on the Challenger Series, and they're not going to know each other's strengths or weaknesses. And that's going to bring this whole new flavor to the Challenger Series, which will then, I think, feed into the CT again, which is literally what we've just seen go down. The vets had no idea what hit them on the CT.
Oh, it's wild to see what's just flipped up. We're going to get to that later in the episode. But yeah, it is. That is such a crazy point that you have just brought up about the fact that because the QS has gone back to being really regional, it's going to allow a lot of those surfers to be able to afford competing in their own regions. And it should hopefully work for the better in a lot of different ways. But from that friendship and that relational aspect that like is so key to anyone that is, you know, probably 20 years old at the moment, like anyone 20 years old and older has lived in that international QS space. And most of their best friends are probably from countries that are not their home country. And that's kind of the case for you and I, Jess, that so many of our friends, because we've traveled so much and surfed so much in so many different places, like our closest friends are from all over the world. And it's such an interesting thing to think of that just kind of being flipped on its head with these changes. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that kind of factors into, like, I don't know, even heat strategy and different things like that that come into play when the Challenger Series comes up. And then when we see these women graduate to the championship tour together.
Yeah. And that's like, isn't that like part of the essence of surfing? I feel like that's where we're going to see the change in women's surfing too, because you relied on those friends like around the world to make you feel comfortable whilst you were competing away from home, experiencing homesickness. You were trying to get the lay of the local land. You're trying to get waves at the local spots where you were competing. You have to find ding repair people. You have to find good food. And without, like, there was no parents, there was no coaches, there was no guidance there. So you relied on each other up until the moment you put the rashi on, you paddled out and you are arch enemies and trying to flog each other in the water. So I think, like, beat each other in the heat, not physically flog each other, but beat each other. So I've said it before a few times, that whole new transition period for surfing that changes so much of it. And I think we'll see it in a different way. But yeah, that's like the most, like you said, for you and for me, the most special parts of surfing and competing is that you could go to any country and one really close friend of yours or more live there, and you completely get enveloped by their family and by their community to stay in that area, and you just experience surfing through that community.
Yeah, Jess, it'll be interesting to see. I guess maybe that more like country camaraderie. I don't know that that's the right saying. That's a Rachelism for sure. But just of, like, you know, that camaraderie of being from the same place. And I think we're going to see that develop probably a lot more, seeing the Aussies that grow into a really tight pack and the Americans, and that kind of support among different nations for each other, which is really exciting. So if you are interested in watching some live surfing this weekend, check out the QSs. They're just low ranked events, but some great surfers coming out of Australia. Boomerang will be webcast by the time this episode is live. Morro Bay, not Pismo Beach, which already ran. Morro Bay will be running through the weekend as well in California. And a little break from Championship Tour surfing that doesn't kick off until Portugal in just a little over a week. So check out the QS.
I might have to call you, Shannon, and just listen to you commentate some QS 1000 heats until you head over to Portugal, because I miss your voice when you're not on the webcast. And I'm so happy that you're a part of that Championship Tour webcast team. I just think, you know, number one fangirl going strong still over here in Australia.
Thanks, Jess. No, really stoked. I got the call up last week for Portugal. So I'm heading out just after the weekend and heading into some very cold weather there. So not necessarily ready for it. Sleeping on the beach. It's going to be 40 degrees.
Accommodation is board bags, and you just have to get those double zip ones that are waterproof.
Exactly. No, straight back into it. So I'll be heading to Portugal and live reporting from there. It'll be fun. And now for a post-heat with Freya Prum, who took the runner-up position at the Phillip Island Pro here in Australia last week. Hey, huge congratulations, Freya, for taking out a second place at Phillip Island. What was that like for the first event of the season?
Yeah, I loved it. Hey, sometimes in these remote venues, less people attend them. And so that's where I feel like I've got a better chance. And I was actually in Marimbula for a month, which is far south coast, New South Wales. So it was only like a 7-hour drive for me to attend the event. And it's a pretty special place for me. My partner learned to surf there after, you know, some family tragedy on his side. And my parents just talk about how good Phillip Island is. They describe it as like A-frames for days back in the 80s. So love being there.
That's so good. It's so special to have those kind of places that you can then show up and actually perform at as well, and that the whole family will like look back with such good memories on.
Yeah, exactly. Like everyone's kind of got fond memories of that place in their memory bank. So it was super cool to like have my own.
What were the conditions like? I know it was tricky for those of us that want to watch that couldn't have webcasts for that event. Yeah. What was it like for you guys out there? And what was it like, you know, making it through the heats up to the finals against Sophie McCulloch?
Yeah, it was pretty typical Vico, like windy, raw. Some days it'd be like super hot and windy, and other days you kind of rugged up and a bit of
frozen.
Rain. Yeah, we didn't have a lot of swell, but there was one day and they actually ran the Victorian state titles or something like that, and they didn't put us on to the very arvo, but it was pretty solid in the morning. And, you know, I was out there on my biggest board just like by myself somewhere at Woolamai, just had the sickest time, just going straight even. But the finals, it was like perfect QE conditions, just like offshore, like this A-frame bank, like waist to shoulder. And then that would have been like the first heats of the men's quarters. And in my heat, the first semi or the second semi, it really declined and it was getting slow. And then for the finals, it was so tough. It was like howling wind blowing straight up the lefts, and there wasn't really much of a right. So, yeah, it was really tricky. Like, surf had it all over me in those conditions. I actually couldn't really surf it. Like, I was happy to get threes. I was like, you know what, it's actually not bad, because I didn't think I could even get it over two. So, yeah, it was what it was. Would have loved to win. But, hey, whoever won, it was their first QS win. So, surf stay.
Oh, that's so special. That's really cool to know for Sophie that was actually her first big win.
Yeah, I didn't actually know that until I saw
that's surprising to me.
Yeah, it is to me too. She rips. And she finaled, I remember, to Molly maybe at Boomerang last year in big waves at Tuncurry. Mm. So, yeah, I mean, she's good enough to win. So it was epic that it happened. And it was cool because she just had the cover shot of Surfing Life. So two, like, huge moments for her. All in a month, like, yeah, it's frothing for her.
Yeah, it was so good for the Aussie stuff, just for the start off of things, and that cover shot for her to kick off the year. That's definitely like the best way for her to start things.
Oh yeah, how good would you feel?
So cool. Hey, tell me about Boomerang. So you're up there. It's obviously the Australian QS is just kicking off. So you've taken a second at the first event, which is such a solid start. And Boomerang, you're seeded through. So your first heat is tomorrow.
That's correct. Yeah. So they're looking around. Two heats of men, two heats of women tomorrow, and then set up for like quarterfinals onwards for finals day. It's pretty standard QE stuff, just onshore and find those runners.
yeah,
pretty small, but it is to pick up, but just a short period wind swell. Water's beautiful.
It's always such a beautiful spot, huh? As far as water conditions 100%. Go, like just the clearest, dreamiest place.
Beautiful. Yeah, it really is. You know, that's why I say it's the best stop on the regional tour. There's so many options around here. It's just like this weird tropical vibe. Like, it's so green around.
It really is.
Yeah, but it's also quite muggy. So, yeah, just can't fault this place. So good.
It's very, very different from where you were just at in Vico.
Yeah, fully. It's a lot drier down there. And the flies down there are so intense. They're, like, massive. And they bite you.
That's so scary. I haven't been down there in a while, like at this time of the year. But yeah, I definitely have some vivid memories of like trying to, you know, get out of the water from a surf and you're just being attacked. Like the moment that you're like out on the sand.
Oh, it's
flies
it's
everywhere.
Full gnarly. Hey? Like
so hectic.
They bite you. Like flies shouldn't bite. Yeah. It's weird.
Exactly. So you just mentioned, you know, how things were, just the fact that you were in Hawaii for a while. What was it like for you making that heat at Pipe for the HIC and getting to surf like the dream location for your sort of surfing, like your heavy wave, wanting to charge, wanting to surf Pipeline? What was that like in the heat?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I was in two minds because obviously it's like such a good opportunity, but it's the Hawaiian Regional Series. And so this is their only chance to qualify for the Challenger Series. And I think they only have that event and maybe one other event in Tahiti. So, you know,
it's a real tricky one right now.
To follow the golden rule, you know, to treat others as you want to be treated. I don't want to ruin anyone else's chances at the call at their challenger, because internationals come over and knock me out, I'd be pissed off. So I was like, okay, I'm going to go out and just try and get a good one. Like, I'm not there to win heats. I'm just there to, like, surf pipe and try and get one. Like, I'm not going to take off and do turns to get through the heat.
Right. You're going to try and get barreled at pipe.
That's right. So I got a little sneaky one and I was happy with that. And nice. So, yeah, it's just the best thing ever, like that, just to be out there and feel its intensity. Like the way the wave approaches you is kind of gnarly. It sort of jacks up right at the last minute. And obviously free surfing is so intense out there. Yeah, just to have this little like half hour, yeah, I'll never forget. Like you just can't, like it's like, you know, one of the top moments of my life. Like seriously, it's so sick. Even though it wasn't huge, it was still like some sets I wasn't going, like, so it was big enough.
Just a little bit worth pulling back on some of those.
Oh, yeah, fully, yeah. But, yeah, like, you know, if I could make the CT and then have myself in the same position where, you know, it is about winning heats, that would be sick. Like, I would like to see if I could kind of just feel what that pressure feels like to be like, oh, you've got priority and there's like an 8-foot wave coming and you're expected to go. Yeah, I'd like to experience that. And I hope I would go, but you never know.
You never know until the moment happens. Now, I believe you would go. Are you kidding me? You're like this, the far South Coast Charger of Australia, that just the footage that we find of you in places is always hectic.
You've got it wrong. Like, people think I charge, but it's not true. I'm so scared out there. Like, I really like to get tubed. Like, I'll pull in if it lets me in, but like, definitely not a charger. Like, no.
Well, we'll see what sort of waves we start seeing posted from you, and we'll let that dictate whether or not you can get your charger and what the rest of us think of you, which is definitely that you're just looking for barrels everywhere. Speaking of that, obviously the dream for you in your career would be to surf pipe in the CT now that it's a women's event out there. You're an accomplished pharmacist, which is amazing. So you've got a profession behind you already, but you're still chugging away from a competitive side with the QS this year. What's your motivation like? Did surfing at Hawaii give you that extra motivation to get back there at that top level? How are you feeling? I guess that's a lot of a loaded question, but how are you feeling coming into the season? Is your motivation still as strong as ever?
Yeah, fully. Hawaii was probably the best thing I've ever done. Like, I don't want to offend anyone, but you really, if you can't perform in Hawaii, I feel like you're missing something in your weaponry, because Hawaiian waves are different, and you know, it's called the proven grounds for a reason. And I actually truly felt that, like, the waves are so much more powerful, so much more intimidating. You need different boards, like, and my experience on the QS is basically just surfing beach breaks in the summertime.
Very, very different.
That's right. We're fortunate to have events on the QS, but you know, they're more set out to when there's most people on the beach to watch you, which is generally, you know, when the weather's nice in summer. So, yeah, having a chance when it's, like, powerful and scary, I think it's really good for the girls to get that next level. And coming back from Hawaii, it has made me a little bit more confident, like, just in the regular Australian beach break. So, yeah, I guess even though I spent all my money over there, it was purely for training. Like, I don't regret it. And it's made me a better, like, a more confident, I would say, in Australian waters. And maybe, like, a heat is not so nerve-wracking or intense, perhaps, as well, compared to being in, like, a 8-to-10-foot pipeline day. So, yeah, it really has given me, like a new kind of leaf on competing.
That's beautiful. I actually love that your income, your savings, has gone to that trip to Hawaii this last year, because it is about that personal, it's investing in what you want to be doing that then will end up paying off. And especially within surfing, like, especially now that the women are going to be expected to perform on the North Shore again, which hasn't been the story for like the last decade at least, you know, now that's back in, the fact that you're ready to put in the work, and that's like from a financial space, you've worked hard to earn something and now you're putting it to where you want to see the payout of that in time spent on the North Shore. And I just think that's so cool. And it's so cool to know that for a woman like you who has been competing for a while now, and you're not, you know, you're not at the beginning of your career, you've been doing this and you've got some amazing results to your career at the moment, and just what you've done already, to know that like that fresh aspect of having the North Shore on the table for women has now given you like a new drive to compete. That's really exciting for me to hear. I love that.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, I can't say that I'm self-funded by any stretch. Like, you know, my father funded a lot of my early days, and then, you know, I went through a stage of where I was not receiving handouts from my family, and my mum gave me a lot of money to get on the Challenge Series. And I did ask for the community as well to help out. So I had some friends. So
that's
not like I don't receive from my family. I do. But yeah, I have to go to work as well. And that's fine. Totally. Like, it is what it is. Not everyone gets the dream run, but you know, you just make the dream run of whatever circumstance you're in. And I mean, look, it is still pretty dreamy. So yeah, I couldn't be more psyched on it, to be honest. I feel like the trip to Hawaii, like my partner Patty, like it changed his life. Like, honestly, it was just the best thing that we could have done. Like, even though financially it made no sense, but you make it work.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. My husband and I actually did a trip to the North Shore he'd been before, but when I went back in 2019 and the first time I ever worked the Triple Crown, That was my first time ever being in Hawaii. And we decided to stick around for a few months after the season and kind of just put in the time and be back in the States. And also for the same reason, like not for our own personal surfing. Obviously, we surfed a ton and it was like really cool to be in warm water and stuff. But
for
the sake of our careers, like to just put in some time there and get to know a different space, something that's really prominent in the surfing world that would really help me in my career if I just spent some time there and got to know that world a little bit better, that it would help my career develop. And like it's fully paid off with a lot of what's kind of opened up for me now. A lot of that came just from the aspect of like deciding to go somewhere and invest there for a little while. It's totally worth it. So I totally back what you guys did there. I just love that it changed Patty's life as well as yours.
Yeah.
And that's just so good. Heading out, you know, focusing back onto Boomerang tomorrow. You mentioned that you've got an ear infection. How are you feeling heading into this competition?
Yeah, bit unprepared. I've chosen not to free surf. I free surfed yesterday. And
okay.
My ears got worse. So I was like, damn it. So, you know, like I've surfed all my life. Like surely the morning surf I'm going to miss tomorrow and the afternoon surf I'm going to miss today shouldn't affect things too much. So, you know, I just got to back myself and my surfing and practice what I've been working towards at the moment with my team. And yeah, you know, at the end of the day, 1,000s aren't going to have a huge impact on qualifications. So yeah, it's just a good practice run either way. And I love Boomerang, but yeah, hey, if I do all right, it's helping the account. So no complaints.
So good. Well, thanks so much for the chat, Freya. I really appreciate it and wishing you all the best there at Boomerang.
Thanks, Shannon.
Oh, Shannon, how good is Freya Prum? She is like no other human and no other surfer on earth. She is such a character and such a shining light for Australian qualifying series surfing.
I love Freya. I've had such a good time getting to know her better over the last, like, probably the last 2 years on the QS. Like, I've known of her for a long time, but we just haven't really crossed paths that much. She is so great. And I just like hearing her froth out on the North Shore is just so cool to know that for her, this is like just something that's really meaningful. Like we've been having this conversation around the North Shore being back on the women's calendar and how much it does mean to the sport overall and how much positive change there is coming for it. But then to hear from a woman who's been wanting something like that for most of her career to have it actually happen to her and hear her perspective is like really rad.
Yeah. And like she grew up in the generation here too. Like Hawaii is a proving ground for Australians and you can be the best Australian pro surfer, but unless you're really good in Hawaii, you're not actually any good at all and you can't handle it. So I think that would be playing into her psyche and that whole experience and euphoria around Hawaii and the North Shore is that she had the chance to prove to herself and to the Australian surfing community at least that she is actually legit. She's a real deal. She's really, really solid surfer and she charges. You know, she's good in small waves. Everybody knows that. Everyone's seen her surf on the QS, but she actually surfs so well in waves of consequence in Hawaii. So yeah, to see her prove herself over there along with the other Aussies, I'm sure she's absolutely wrapped.
So good. Well, thanks so much, Freya, for the catch up. Can't wait to see how you go at Boomerang. Next up on the list, Jess, is the new tour vlog with Laura Inover that the WSL has released post-Pipeline. So we're waiting for the second episode of Sunset to be released, but we got our full access pass to Pipe behind the scenes with Laura Inover, and I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm going to say, I'm going to just, as a disclaimer, be super biased and say I'm so happy to have an Australian female voice in surf commentary. I'm stoked to see.
You feel represented?
Yeah, I do. I do feel a little bit represented. I mean, God, we're so downtrodden, middle-aged, white female. No, but I'm really happy to see that she's got that. But I do want to say I would love to see her be given free rein with this. I would love to see her just take it and run with it and not be kind of pulled in any way or constricted with how she wants to put it together because when you get Laura uncut, those will be the bits that really are the gold. She is hilarious and she has such a quirky way of viewing everything around her and surfing. And she's been around it since day dot, cartwheeling down the beach on the junior series in Australia. She is who she is and she makes no excuses for it. And she's pretty funny chick. And of course she charges. So, I mean, give her free rein. Let her just run amok because she is literally the life of the party. We've heard like Steph Gilmore and that say that in so many interviews. She's a life of the party. So yes, give her free rein. I mean, she made that call. It was a bit of a, I think, a gamble when they put on Dimity and Laura, because they weren't sure what they were going to be like. And Laura made that call at Newcastle where she called Mick Fanning Ricky Bobby. And I just thought, yeah, this is going to be amazing. Good. Like, this is going to be so good. She said, you go so fast. Like, I'm going to call you Ricky Bobby. And I just thought, this will be like colorful. Like, she's a very colorful character. And she just says whatever comes to mind. Give her the freedom. Give her the creative freedom to say what she wants on that thing and it will be hilarious. Or if you find it a little bit, you know, dull and maybe scripted, just watch Laura Uncut. Hopefully that'll come out of that vlog, or the B-roll.
B-roll, yeah, we need the B-roll.
B-roll will be gold from Laura's vlog.
That's so good. I love that call. It'll be interesting. Well, I think kind of fun to see like how it develops too, because this is obviously just the first episode that's out and the WSL is testing something new. And it's really cool that they've given the spot to Laura also, that it's like a woman that's in that role that's behind the scenes. She's such good friends with everybody as well. Like, I mean, you just said all those things about her, but like she absolutely shreds. There's literally footage of her in this tour vlog, like charging big pipe. So she clearly can handle herself. And we already know like she surfs Jaws and stuff as well now.
She's a nutcase. She's an absolute nutcase. Like she says it, she calls herself that. She's like, she's not quite sure how many kangaroos are jumping around in the paddock, but there's a couple. Like she fully just throws herself over 40-foot, 50-foot ledges continuously.
Oh,
she's like, that takes a different type of human. So that's what I mean. Like, give her a camera, give her a microphone, and watch what happens with this chick if they put it to air. If they don't, track down the B-roll.
So good. Well, there's going to be 11 of these that come out. Like, she's going to every single stop on tour. She'll be filling in on the commentary team as well as filming behind the scenes, which will be really fun to see, like, her just develop in that space. I think she's such a good addition to all of that. And yeah, I'm excited to see what else comes out of this as we
put her on the ski. Let her drive the ski, Shannon. You saw.
Oh, drive the ski. Not even just like reporting from behind.
Yeah, like put her on some type of motorized vehicle in that vlog, because something funny will happen. Like at the climax of her movie, Undone, when she like reverses the trailer over her brother's leg and busts his knee after he's just recovered from broken back. Like,
what?
Put her behind a motorized vehicle in the vlog and it will be even better, because she's just like, she's just 110% on that. She's like full throttle, that girl.
They need to make sure they've got their insurance in place before they do something like that with her.
Yeah, absolutely. Bring it on. I'm ready for B-roll.
So good. Well, stoked to see that. Be sure to check it out. It's all over the WSL. Well, Jess, for our final wrap-up of the day, we get to talk about Sunset. And it is official that the North Shore has closed and Sunset is over.
I can hear your face like smiling so hard. You're trying so hard to wheel that one in. But yep, it's official.
It's official. It's done.
Say,
and the women have surfed Sunset for the first time in like, I think, about a decade on the championship tour, which is really awesome.
It was so good to see them surf. Like, okay, I'm just going to call out the elephant in the room for that event on the CT.
Okay.
Hello, veterans on the championship tour. What have you been doing for the last few months? Like, honestly, hands down, most incredible surfers in the world. But like we said, Hawaii is the proving grounds for Australians at least. And didn't it just shine a light on the amount of work that the rookies on tour have been doing? And they completely caught the veterans off guard and in a state of complacency. And I just think it was just overly obvious. And they can put it down to, oh, all of those veterans at once had bad heats and just had a bit of bad luck. No, they were caught off guard by how much work the rookies have been doing in the off season.
I love that call out. That's exactly it. It was like unbelievable to see. Pipe was a tough start for the rookies for sure. There was, you know, a couple that kind of found a little bit of rhythm out there, but not really. And that was like a really hard event to be thrown into the deep end with. But then suddenly when they were given a wave like Sunset, and this is, there's just like so many different places we could go with this conversation. But my one thought on like, yeah, 100% the veterans were just totally caught off guard and the rookies came prepared. They put their time in. They had their setup. Like they knew what they needed to do. They've also been surfing pro juniors out there for a while. So there is a lot of the younger women who have probably had more recent success out at sunset and heat time out there. So I was wondering how much that would factor in compared to the women that have been on tour for forever, who maybe had a couple of standout good waves, but just couldn't quite put an entire performance together at a wave as tricky as sunset, that maybe it did have something to do with the fact that those juniors have been able to surf heats out there more recently.
Yeah, I have to agree. Like you, the people that have put in the time out there, whether or not they were the juniors or they were Malia who's living there, or, you know, the Hawaiian girls, the time is what stood out. And that's what prompted me to think that it was the work, like the work rate that they put in. Like, I'm not saying that the veterans didn't work. Oh, like, come on, like it's Carissa and that. They're incredible, like freakishly talented surfers that work so hard. But I'm just saying, I reckon the work rate of the rookies is higher again. I think that that is a perfect, it's just the evidence of it. You can't win at a place like that unless you're putting in the time, and look who's done well. So yeah, I think it's a warning shot to the veterans. And I think that we're going to see in Portugal, they've literally like all gone back scrambling, scratching off the whiteboard and going, what do I need to do to step it back up? And we're going to see them come super aggressive in Portugal, and you're going to get that firsthand, I reckon, over there.
Yeah, well, it is pretty wild, like seeing, you know, because we have that mid-season cut coming up in just three events. So Portugal, Margaret River, and Bells. And by the end of that run, there's going to be six women that are no longer on tour, which is pretty heavy. And now that's a lot of veterans that are sitting below that cut line, and they seriously do have a lot of work to do. Portugal's also like newer to the calendar again for the women, because they surfed there for the first time in 2019. So they had like one shot and then haven't surfed there again. But then between Bells and Margaret River, like all of the veterans have their moments where they've had outstanding performances out there. And so you could see them having that bit where they feel that they could maybe rely on knowing that they know a wave like that so well, where that's going to be something different for the rookies. But then it is interesting to think that, like, looking at what we actually had for conditions at sunset, right? So first day, it was like kind of difficult. There's a lot of morning sickness. The swell kind of had to settle in, and the trade winds were there and everything. But as the conditions cleaned up, those performances from the women started to just improve really quickly. And throughout the entire competition, we got to see some of the biggest swell that we've seen the current women on tour actually surf in. And it's similar to those big days at Margaret River and at Bells. And so you would have kind of thought, at least I would have thought, that the veterans would have capitalized on big conditions like that out at sunset. And I think the rookies, what do you call that when your phone talks to you?
Siri.
Siri just started talking to me.
Does Siri have an opinion on sunset?
Siri, what is your opinion? That was weird.
What do you think?
But like, I reckon that the veterans would have thought if they got good big sunset, they would be able to capitalize. And suddenly the rookies just went out there and absolutely dominated them. And that's got to be having them absolutely spinning.
What's that saying? This may potentially be my first Rachelism, but I'm going to try and say the actual saying. What's that saying about when hard work outworks talent, or talent doesn't work, or something like that? That's, for me, was an example. Like, any day of the week, like, put Carissa's or Steph's forehand calves against most of those rookies, and they still haven't closed the gap in finesse and power and overall just like amazing to watch. Like, calf for calf or turn for turn, maybe not, but like you said, putting them at this complex competition zone like sunset, where the time counts, the work counts, and that extra, I don't know what it is, what the word is for it, but being in the flow of that competition out there, it really counts for something, and it shows up, and it, yeah, that's it. Like, competition surfing, CT or qualifying or in any capacity, is not about the single calves or the single maneuvers. It's about the whole package, and the rookies have it. They just have it. I haven't seen a rookie class like this come through. Like, you see the one or two maybe every now and again that burst onto the scene, but to have the whole rookie class like this, like, whoa. Like, women surfing, like, they're just going to do good, because, I mean, who's been pushing Carissa and Steph anyway? Who's been pushing those girls? Like, they've been pushing each other, but now they've got this whole other gear they're going to have to shift up. And if they want to continue being the best, like, let's see them. They've got more in the tank, 100% know it. There's that period of time, which I think has passed, where Steph and Carissa could turn up to any single event and you know, in like a Kelly Slater-esque style, like not have to overthink the event or their surfing, because they are that much better than most of the girls. They're just like another league in themselves, that if they're on, they're on. You can't beat them. But I think that those kind of times in women's surfing in the championship tour are apart, and I think that has a lot to do with the new format, because you get a rookie class like this, which is stacked and packed, and they're closing the gap. Like, they are just outworking people at the moment. I know I've said it a few times already, but I just think it. I mean, except for someone like Brissa. Like, Brissa's a beautiful example of a veteran who is just kind of, she kind of reminds me of like Sally Fitzgibbons. Like, she's just been quietly and really humbly and intentionally building this solid foundation for herself and her career. And she hasn't experienced like the overnight success that a lot of the surfers have, but I think that she's building this long-term success for herself, and you can see it. Like, someone said to me this word, I think it was you actually, Shannon, that said the word gravitas, and it's like that's, you could see it in her post-heat interviews as she was making her way through the round. She just had this other thing, like this vibe that you normally would see in Steph or Carissa, where they're just so tuned into themselves and they're so grounded in what they're doing, not necessarily for the result. And she just had that from like second round in, and you know, it was hard not to think she was going to do well. So, you know, she's the standout for me. The rookies blew everyone else away, but Brissa had that extra something, extra spice, and took the first win for the Costa Rican women. And
yeah, that was so incredible to see Brissa get that. And I think what was kind of interesting is that she was mistakenly called a rookie multiple times. Like, I saw multiple different media platforms call Brissa a rookie over the last couple of weeks on the North Shore, which is a bit frustrating because that's just like not accurate. And she's been on tour, but she is only in her third year now. I guess maybe technically fourth, because we're in 2022 and it's been kind of a weird few years, but 2019 was her first year. So she's still really new to it in that sense of like getting a feeling, compared to the veterans of Malia and Courtney and Tyler and Sally and Steph and Carissa, like the women that have actually been there for the last decade and have dominated for that long. And so I think that was even like a really incredible thing to be able to see Brissa like figure out a formula, especially after falling off tour in 2021, then getting onto the Challenger Series and making that comeback to requalify. Like, she would have already been feeling sort of like she had to change something to kind of put herself in a position where she was going to make that cut line and not have to do the Challenger Series again. Like, I'm sure that was one of her main goals coming into the year. Mm. But now that she's just walked through and taken a win at Sunset of all places, that's a place that has a lot of significance to her personally, and she's grown up competing there for a long time. I think that's just going to open up like a whole different level of confidence, which is what we want to see from someone who is as humble and as quiet as kind of what we see in maybe a Steph a little bit, in that sort of attitude, like you mentioned, you know, that you would see in those post heats from Brissa, of suddenly that little flare of like, oh, there's something different here. And it's a little bit scary because it's so calm and quiet, but it's so confident that it can't be beat. And she found that little piece to the puzzle, which was really cool to see. And I think it was something that was also really cool to see the rest of the women kind of acknowledging this week. A lot of the posts kind of put up by other competitors, and just like recognizing that that was kind of the air that Brissa had around her. And I think it was like this really special thing of seeing women celebrate women and being like, this is a moment to really celebrate Brissa and this special time for her to take a win out in a way that was so beautiful. And it was so different from like this hard fought battle and this aggressive mentality, where you obviously, she went into heats aggressively and she had like competitive strategy and stuff, but it was just kind of that thing of like something magical that she just couldn't really be beat, which was really cool. But then so unfortunate to see Malia Manuel be the one that made it to the final up against Brissa in that form, because it was also the moment where Malia was in her seventh final of the championship tour of her years on tour, and she walked away with another second, and she has yet to finally get that win. And so it was like this major heartbreak moment to see Malia not get the win when she has put in so much time, and she had a great opening round, and she really just surfed that wave so beautifully. But then it was just like she wasn't going to be able to beat Brisa in that final.
Yeah, like Malia and Brisa are like perfectly matched up. Like you said, like they both have that gracefulness and this beautiful like feminine energy about them. And it's funny because it's like kind of juxtaposed between or against the backdrop that everyone kind of imagines Hawaii to be, or they try and play it up to be this like crazy, ferocious, like intense, powerful place, which it is, but it also is this beautiful, graceful, feminine energy kind of thing. So yeah, I like what you said about Brisa, just seeing her able to take her maiden win for Costa Rica and for herself. And it was really beautiful. And I think she kind of, I liken her to like, and Malia maybe too, to like Sally Fitz and Joanne DeFay in the way they're playing kind of the long game with their surfing careers. Like they're not the overnight burst onto the scene, show up and blow up kind of surfers. They're like working every day at their own pace on what they want to work on for that long game of like longevity in their surfing career. And like you said, Brisa is so young and she has so much to grow into in her surfing as well, and which she would know. And like I just think back, like I went to China at the start of a QS season, just at the kickoff of COVID.
For the Corona Open China.
For the Corona Open in Hainan in China.
Of all the sponsors they could have had.
I know, it's ironic. Like I honestly think my t-shirt that says Corona Open of China 2019 or 2020, whatever it was.
I think it was 2020. Like it was right at the start.
Yeah, 2020, that's going to be a collector's item. Like,
totally.
Does that even happen like that?
It's going to buy you a house one day.
Yeah. So I went over there to work on the webcast team for that, and Brisa actually took the win over there.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, for that opening event of the season. And her mum, who always travels with her, Katie, who we saw on the webcast at Sunset, they actually took out pretty much half of the women's competition scene. So there was like 10 or 15 girls and their families, and then myself and a couple of other people that were working around the event. They took us all out for dinner at this Chinese restaurant to celebrate Brisa's win, but not in like a party way, like in this beautiful, like just they wanted to have a meal with everybody. They were so graceful and they had so much gratitude for their experience over there in China that they wanted to just say thanks to everybody that surrounded them in that experience. And it was just like, it was kind of, it took me back because it was kind of weird, like the difference that she is on tour. Like, I guess I would imagine if someone else or if I'd won an event or something, it's just like party time. And then for her to do that in just such a different way, I was like, wow, taken aback. And she has that something else. She has that, she's like this other, I don't know what it is. It's the soul of her and everything, the essence of her is so different. And I think she's a great representative for women surfing. But yeah, let's look at the long game for Brisa. And she's so young. So I'd love to see her just fly that Costa Rican flag and take that femininity to that level of competition. You know, we've given so much credit to Steph for her grace in the surf, but let's have a look at Brisa's grace behind the camera, like you said, Shannon.
Yeah, that's such a good insight to just knowing how she handled that victory back in China and to think of, you know, what could have been happening, like the celebrations and the way that she would have been honoring the people around her at Sunset this week. I know it was like really cool for her to just be able to surf in Hawaii as well. So she's obviously like grew up her young years in Costa Rica, spent a lot of the past few years living in Fiji or traveling obviously on tour, but her family now lives in Fiji. But she's a product of Hawaiian surfing from a very young age, and we know this about her. And it makes sense, like seeing her be able to attack Sunset, but to be able to do it with those like really beautiful, long, drawn out bottom turns, and just to be able to have a style and an approach to waves that really suit surfing at Sunset obviously speaks to the fact that she has like grown up surfing that sort of stuff quite a lot. She also has like that influence from Poncho Sullivan, and Poncho was her caddy for the first event that she ever surfed at Sunset, which is really cool. So there's like a lot of those sort of things that you can like pick up that have like filtered through into who Brisa is as a human, because she's got that Hawaiian influence. And even as you were explaining that sort of idea that people have of like the North Shore and of Hawaii and being like really intense and kind of scary and everything, and it totally is, but then actually what the people of Hawaii embody is so different. And I think of John when this kind of conversation comes up usually. And I just think like John's the least terrifying person on the planet, but he is like the product of the product of the product of North Shore surfing, you know? Mm. And I think he's just such an embodiment of someone that is humble and gracious and also like is the best surfer in the world. And to think of so many of these women coming up out of there, like Brisa, who kind of embodies that same thing, is really incredible.
And all the Hawaiians, like how much do the Hawaiian women dominate at that? Like,
well, that's totally it. So Brisa, obviously Costa Rican, right? Representing Costa Rica, flying that flag very proudly from there, but she is a product of Hawaiian surfing. So for the sake of this conversation, we'll count that little Hawaiian tick for her.
Watch out, the Costa Rican mafia's on to you.
So sorry, Costa Rica and Carlos Munoz, but for the sake of this, we'll just throw it out there. Within that, Malia, Betty Lou, Gabby, Luana.
Like, what more do you have to say? Like,
incredible performances. Like, that is such strong surfing coming out of Hawaii to have that many represented on the championship tour for women right now.
Like, and then back to that thing that we first said at the very start or earlier on is, what about the super juniors now coming out of Hawaii, which the other regions don't know? Like, everybody's has tagged and asterisked and put a target on these girls' head now. If you're from another region, okay, you know Gabby, you know Betty, you know all these people, Luana. But what about all the super groms? Like, nobody knows them yet. Like, whoa, imagine the next level up of Hawaii surfing for women.
It's going to be so unbelievably good. And to think of the fact that there's already three rookies this year that have come out of Hawaii. And then they all like put on such good performances there between Gabby, Luana, and Betty Lou. And they're still so young. We're talking like Gabby's in her 20s now. But Luana is only 17. Actually, Gabby might only be 19. She's not even 20 yet. And then Luana 17 and Betty Lou is 16. So that's like kids, still children, literally attending high school, who are just that like confident, I think, in themselves in a really humble way that they're able to like show up and represent when they need to.
And did you see, I'm sure you remember, but Luana did the start of the QS season over here in Australia a couple of years ago. She did that New South Wales roadie, the Great New South Wales like pro surf series. And she took a win up at the Boomerang event, which is going on right now.
She took that
win. Yeah. Back at, it was a 1000 or a 1500. And everybody was like, who in the world is this?
She would have only
like
been like 15 or something, huh?
She was 15 and she was so quiet and just like, just surfed so much and just was really like humble, quiet around the event, like that graceful Hawaiian attitude we're talking about. And then suddenly she's just knocked down all the top players in this QS region and she takes the win. Everyone's like, what? Who is this chick? So yeah, she's like, she's got a small wave game too. That's what I'm talking about in that overall rookie class. Like now they've just proven themselves in the proving ground and from where they come from, like they've got big waves on dial. They're not scared. Like you said, they're confident. Put them in smaller waves, put them in beach breaks, put them in point breaks, mate. The veterans, I would be sweating if I was the veterans right now on tour.
It's so crazy. Like I'm just looking at the round of 16 draw right now, which was literally a bloodbath for like those that have been established on the tour. That's what it was. Luana, all five rookies, right? Luana beat Tatiana, Gabby beat Steph, Molly beat Carissa, India beat Sally, and Betty Lou beat Lakey. In what world would we have imagined that happening where all five rookies would have advanced through to the quarterfinals?
I wonder whose fantasy surfer team for the women would have done well then. I wonder who put all those rookies in their picks. Like I wonder if anyone did put them all in and got like the full flash with that.
Whoever has done that is the one that's winning fantasy at the moment.
Maybe we need to get them on like the grind or give them a segment, like fantasy surfer segment for the double up, because that is like some psychic stuff looking into the future for that. And they tapped in.
That is so good. Taking a look at like who took it out. Okay. So for us, for Sunset per event, Smart Sam took out the win for our fantasy league. So she must have had, I'm going to look right now at her fantasy team. Okay. So she had Betty Lou and Molly both as picks. And then Malia, which is a great pick because that was a finalist. And then Tyler didn't really get her anywhere. But solid to like put the bet on the two rookies in Betty Lou and in Molly for sure. And take herself out with a pretty solid finish for sunset. Okay, so for our fantasy surfing, for those of you that are following us on the double dash up on fantasy, Sam Smart took the win for sunset. And then Kolohe Kojima is actually winning overall. But I think it's just because she has such a big crush on Ethan Ewing. And she put all her money on Ethan for sunset and he did so well.
But wait, you're assuming Kolohe is a female, like Kolohe Kojima, like there's Kolohe and Dino, like that guy's a guy. So Kolohe, I think just keep going with your heart there because you seem to be doing pretty well. But
you're on let's fire, see Kolohe.
Can Sam Smart back it up? Like if they've picked all of the rookies, like are they going to adapt and adjust to the warning calls and the gunshots that have gone off here for the veterans? And then watch, I'm going to put this out there. I don't have fantasy surfer in this group yet, but I'm going to put one in before Portugal because you just watch Carissa, Steph, Tyler, Sally come back swinging. Like they've just been pushed up against the ropes, literally flipped out of the boxing ring. They're coming back swinging. And I think let's see if who takes over after Portugal.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy. I definitely think that the veterans are going to step up really strong in Portugal. I just don't see that not happening. And like the veterans didn't put on poor performances. I mean, Courtney Conlogue in her round one, she had a 9.1, which was like a crazy takeoff. It was on a really good wave. And she looked really good. Like I actually picked her as my power surfer because out of her first heat, she was just that on it and that confident and just like felt really good in attacking a wave like that. We could definitely see some of those women, especially thinking of the fact that Portugal at this time of the year, it should be better than when they'd typically run Portugal in October every year. And the last few weeks, it's been absolutely pumping at Super Tubos, which is where the contest is going to be held. So it could actually be like really good, solid surf out there for the veterans to kind of step back up, which would be really exciting. So one last thought that I do have on that rookie conversation specifically is the quarterfinal that we saw between Gabrielle O'Brien and Luana Silva was so cool. I absolutely love that they both got into the excellent range. There was kind of like a bit of a toss-up though between waves from Luana and Gabby in that one. So Luana got a wave that gave her a high score of an 8.83 and she got that wave first. And it was a phenomenal wave. Had a bit more size to it than Gabby's wave did. And Gabby's wave came through and she got this bottom turn on like her, it was like after her third turn or after her second turn. So going into her third turn, that was a bottom turn that I think for probably any of the girls and most of the guys would have been like a double pump bottom turn. And Gabby did it in one straight line. Like she held her rail line so aggressively and so smoothly, and then tapped it into this top turn that was like such an insane combination that I thought, and actually the commentators called it out as going into the nines. They thought it was going to be better than Luana's. So Gabby's wave came through as an 8.27, just below Luana's 8.83. And the commentators, and I agreed with them on this point, and I can see where the judges went with it, but they said the only difference for why Gabby's would maybe, and they kind of threw it out before this scores actually even dropped, was they thought it should go nine. And then they said, well, the wave was smaller, so it had a little bit less to it than what Luana's had on offer. And so I know that like comes into, it factors into what the judges are looking at, which I actually disagree with. This is like one of the Shannon opinions, is that I think at least in longboarding, and now I guess I have to rethink this conversation on the shortboarding side, but I would have thought, in my opinion, Gabby's wave was better, but I'm still both like deserving the excellent scores. And I just thought it was so cool that they both made it to the quarterfinals, their second championship tour ever, their rookie years, and that they both brought through two of the biggest scores of the entire event in that heat. And then Gabby did go on to win that heat and make it into the semifinals. Didn't make it into the final, of course, but pretty incredible performance from both of them.
Yeah, it was. And I think I'm going to like disagree with you there on thinking that Gabby's is better only because, just my personal opinion, when I watch them surf, I wish they didn't come up against each other in the quarters. I wish they'd kind of like progressed on either side of the draw and found each other later on, because I think that they were the two standout surfers around those rounds. But and I always find it hard to watch the standouts knock each other out. I'd rather see
them.
It's
so
you know,
hard.
Yeah, it's so hard when that happens. And yeah, when rookies knock each other out, I'd rather see them be pitted up against the other side of the draw until later on. But I think that, I don't know, when I watch Gabby surf, I can never tell what she's going to do. Yeah, and I find her very raw still, and that a lot of her surfing surprises me. Maybe that's because I haven't seen a lot of her surf, but I think there's this like, there's this so much raw power that sometimes in between the turns, I find it, even though she doesn't double pump, that it's a little bit disjointed. Whereas when I watch Luana's wave, and I know that they still nod pretty heavily to this, I guess without being a judge, I know that they're looking at this from, you know, I'm just another, you know, fangirl on the spectator sideline, but they're always looking at that flow and that speed and the overall kind of like linking. And I find Luana really smooth to watch, and she just kind of flows a little bit more for me. That's the only reason personally I put her score above. But yeah, I can see the debate. I think it could have gone either way, and somehow, you know, they had to come to an average with that. It's hard when someone like Gabby's surfing and she loads up on a bottom turn, when you see all three fins, like she literally didn't have a fin in the water pretty much. She just had a rail in the water. And like, yeah, she's unpredictable and raw in a good way. I'm excited to see how she puts it all together.
Yeah, I do like that. I hear what you're saying. And I sometimes forget that flow is part of shortboarding. I just think of longboarding because it's like so graceful and beautiful and everything. But then like with shortboarding, it's that makes a lot of sense actually in the linking together of an entire wave like that. That would be one extra thing they're keeping in mind.
I could be wrong. Like the judges are another creature in surfing. They think in totally different ways and deconstruct things in the moment. But I think that it has been a really big part of judging in women's surfing. It kind of went away for a couple of years. I think when the performance went up, the flow and the style and the overall linking things together kind of went out the window for a little bit. Maybe not necessarily with the top girls, but it's come back now because everyone's been able to put things together so well that, yeah, it's kind of come back in the scene for judging, for shortboarding at least. And they are not afraid to crucify you for not putting turns together.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. Maybe a little bit brutal, but you did say bloodshed in Hawaii. So that's what I'm thinking about.
Oh, man. Well, we've talked enough about the Hawaiians, that's for sure, in this episode. They absolutely dominated, as well as the rookies. Thinking about a couple of Aussies before we send it off, because you are the Australian, and I know you've got a few fan favorites out there of your own. Yep. I did want to note that it was great to see Bronte out there. Unfortunate to see her go out so early. But again, like, she hasn't surfed competitively since Mexico, which was what? June of 2021. So it's been probably 8-9 months since she's been in a jersey. She was surfing on borrowed boards. So it wasn't even like she was, you know, she wasn't ready for the North Shore. Like, that was pretty last minute call up for her to get the spot for Caroline Marks pulling out. And so it'll be interesting to see if she gets the opportunity to go at Super Tubes.
Yeah. I mean, I'm always flying the flag over here in the outback for all the Aussies, but I'm so glad we make up such a big portion of the rookie class. But I think Bronte's, I don't know what's personally going on for her, but I know that her whole family suffered some pretty gnarly tragedy over the last couple of years. And I just think it's probably playing out a little bit now for her performance, where it's, you know, just one of those things where she works so hard normally and probably has been for the events leading into this or to get a chance, but there's just so much going on outside of surfing for her family that, yeah, it's just kind of, I think personally opinion on that situation that just shone through in the performance. And that's like, you know, they're the highs and lows of competing at the professional level. Everything outside of the competition jersey affects the competition jersey, and that's what's happened with Bronte, I think. And with the other Aussies, like India Robinson, like, ooh, watch out. Like, when she puts a few more heats together, she comes from really good surfing stock in Victoria. Her brother absolutely rips. Could have been, you know, one of the Jacko Bakers on tour if he wanted to be as well. She's ferocious. She's really smart. She's similar to, I'm going to still claim her as an Aussie, but Isabella Nichols, and she, India's studying as well and running her own business. And she's really linked in with the high performance stuff here in Australia and the teams that are working for Surfing Australia. So yeah, she's definitely one to put on the fantasy team if you're going to watch her. And of course, Molly, like, she gets so much coverage, but the pickle from right here, hometown for me, from North Shelley, she's just, you can see, she wants to prove herself. She's ferocious. I mean, you've had, for the double up, you did some rookie interviews, I think.
Yeah, we haven't actually released that episode yet, but we do have a rookies episode on ice, so it'll be out soon.
Oof, I can't wait for that one to drop because I'm interested to hear what they all say and like the way that they carry themselves, because I love that tenacity that they have and they're not afraid to like call it out. I think there was, remember that time in shortboarding where all the post-heat interviews were like, oh, we love everyone. Everything's so yeah. great. I love surfing. And I just went out there and I just, you know, I was just surfing and like that's, but everybody knew that wasn't really the story because, you know, these girls train harder than anybody in and out of the water and they want to win. They're there to win. Their whole life goes into winning in these events and surfing at that level. But they weren't like voicing that on the post-heats, but now the rookies get behind the mics and they're like, yeah, like this is my plan. This is my strategy. I've been working on this. I really want to win. And particularly Molly, she's a mongrel. I've said it a million times. I'll say it again. She's an absolute Australian mongrel. She wants to win. She wants to beat and completely slaughter everybody. She does not want to come second. And she does definitely not want to lose in the early rounds. Like she's out there to win. And yeah, let's see the Aussies bring it on. And I mean, that brings me to out. She's still Aussie in my heart, Isabella Nichols. But yeah, she has made the flag change, which we saw a lot happening probably about 5 years ago. There was people like Mahina Maeda who changed from Hawaii to Japan. There's, yeah, so many girls that have done it. And now Isabella Nichols has changed flags. And I'm definitely saying that's a long-term Olympic play for her.
Yeah, 100% the Olympic move for Bella, moving over to that Danish flag representing Denmark. I think it's a good call because, man, Aussie, that is going to be a tough team to fight her way into. Although she's proving to be one of the strongest out of Australia at the moment, but it's definitely a tight field to get into those top two spots to get an Olympic spot. So I definitely think that is a good call for her to represent the Danish flag. And interesting that it hasn't really been talked about, but it's quite a huge move. Also, just one thing to add into your conversation around post-heats and then Molly, like the pickle, just being pretty open and honest with that. The one of her interviews there at Sunset, she literally was just like, all the rookies, we all have all the confidence. And so we can do this and we believe in ourselves. And it was just that straightforward. It wasn't like beating around the bush in the slightest. And I thought that was really cool that she just felt she could say that, and also terrifying for the veterans on tour to know that the rookies, because she said it as a collective. She's like, as the rookies, we're all super confident rookies. Like it wasn't just Molly's confidence. She's like, we all believe that we deserve to be here and we're showing you that we do, which is awesome.
Do you know what I hear in my head when those things are happening? I hear the full and like all the veterans like shrugging their shoulders up and ducking for cover. Like, oh, like the rookies are just like loading up the guns like everywhere. And the veterans are like, oh, what's about to happen to us? Like.
That's exactly it. And that's so crazy. Well, it was a good conversation, Jess. Thanks so much for breaking down Sunset with me. Huge congratulations to Brisa Hennessy for taking out her very first championship tour win. It couldn't go to anyone more deserving. Although we could say that of all of the women, but we're really stoked for Brisa this week. And it was clearly just her event. And so fun to break down all the action with you, Jess.
Thank you so much for having me. I look forward to hopefully another guest co-host edition of the Double Up. I'm sure I'll step out of Rachel's shoes and I'm happy to sit alongside the two of you and maybe learn from a little bit of the Rachelisms. But thank you so much for having me. I love talking about women surfing.
Well, you know that you are on speed dial for me and I'll call you up to talk about this stuff any day. So it was great to finally put it onto recording. And of course, for those of you listening in, please be sure to sign up to our newsletter on the website. Give us some feedback, send in any questions or topics you'd like to hear about. Our website is www.womensurf.net. Our email is info@womensurf.net. And our Instagram is @the.double.up. So be sure to have a look and let us know how you thought this conversation with our guest host, Jess Grimwood, went today.
Or don't. Be nice.
Or don't. I'll just start out and then tee it up and Jess, how many times am I going to call you Rachel tonight?
Put that in.
You can say as much as you want to. Well, Jess, for our final wrap-up of our conversation today, we're going straight into sunset, which was really exciting to see it all run through. And the North Shore now has been... I was going to say the North Shore has been close.
Keep saying that. That's fine. We'll go with that. You heard it here first on the Double Up. The North Shore is now officially closed.